Welcome to the Fightful Select Weekender Podcast. Today is Sunday, June 9th, 2024. I'm Steven Jensen. Hope you had a great week and a great weekend. Got a lot to talk about in today's episode, so we will go through the topics and jump into it. On this edition of the Weekender, we have results for BLP Family Reunion, NJPW Dominion, HOG Mike Santana Presents Puerto Rican Weekend, Glory Pro Ascend Episode 38. Got some predictions for TNA Against All Odds, because that show will be happening this week before, you know, you hear from me next week on next edition of the Weekend or so. Got TNA predictions right here on today's show. Also have results for NWA Power, NXT Level Up. Got predictions for NXT Battleground. That show will be happening later today at the time of this recording. And there's also some NXT news. One of their superstars actually appearing at an independent show just last night. So we'll talk about that as well. And I'll wrap up today's episode of the Weekender with spoilers for both Ring of Honor and MLW. So we got a good mix this week of results, predictions, and spoilers. And before we get into the actual topics, I want to give a quick shout out to Beef, the former Gnarls Garvin, as I knew him when I first discovered him years ago. Beef defeated Davey Vega for the AEW Heavyweight Championship last night at AEW's Day of Defiance. That's available over on High Spots. I have not been able to watch the show yet, but I know that Beef won the title because I saw it all over Twitter and all over AEW social media. So, of course, I wanted to give him a shout-out on today's show. And once I have a chance to catch up on the full show and the full set of results, I will cover it right here for y'all on the Weekender. But once again, congratulations to Beef on becoming the AEW Heavyweight Champion, once again defeating Davey Vega at Day of Defiance. All right, now kicking off the first set of results we've got today, we're going to start off with Black Label Pro. This is BLP Family Reunion. This is available over on Triller TV Plus as a part of their monthly package. That's going to be a few shows that we cover today and most weekends. We cover Triller TV Plus shows, so that's where you can watch this, and I'll try to tell everyone where to watch all the events as I go through the results today if you want to check these shows out yourself. That said, the show took place out of Chicago, Illinois, out of Logan Square Auditorium. This was on the 7th, so this show took place on Friday night. And once again, BLP Family Reunion, these are the results. We had Jordan Oliver over Rico Gonzalez in the opening match. The finish here was, let me backtrack a little bit. Heading into this match, Jordan Oliver had been saying that he was going to beat Rico Gonzalez with a headlock takeover. Very similar to the Darby Allin and MJF feud from AEW, which honestly is one of my favorite feuds in the history of AEW as a company. I love that feud. I love their matches with one another. They had an opening match at I'm so bad at remembering the pay-per-view names, but MJF and Darby had an opening match at an AEW pay-per-view like a couple years back, and I thought it was one of the best matches in AEW history. I think those guys have incredible chemistry with one another, and I love the story of the match. Now that said, that reminded me of that because Jordan Oliver called his shot and came through with it. Basically, what happens at the end of this match is Jordan throws Rico towards the referee. Rico stops himself from hitting the ref, but then Jordan runs after Rico and goes ahead and just pokes the ref right in the eyes, just blatantly pokes the ref in the eyes, and turns around, kicks Rico in the dick, and then does a headlock takeover. The ref counts 1, 2, 3. So Jordan Oliver comes through on his promise of beating Rico Gonzalez with a headlock takeover, and, you know, I'm totally down for Jordan Oliver as a heel. He's obviously going to be a heel going forward in BLP, and I like that a lot. I wouldn't mind a heel turn in GCW either. He's a very over babyface in every company that he's in, but, you know, something new for Jordan isn't a bad idea. It really depends on what route they want to go with him in GCW. That's a whole other topic, in itself. There was no GCW shows this weekend to really talk about, but I've said it 1,000 times here and on the spotlight all over the place. I've talked about how I think Jordan Oliver very well could be a GCW world champion, with Mansell Warner being the current champion as a heel. You know, I would imagine it'd be better off for Jordan to be a babyface at the moment because he might have a shot against Mance, you know, for that title. That all said, it all depends on the booking and the stories and all that stuff, of course. But that's all a roundabout way of basically saying I'm interested to see Jordan Oliver as a heel in BLP, and I'm interested to see if he's a heel in more places going forward in the near future. After that, we had a tag team match where Jannai Kai and Rachel Armstrong defeated Maggie Lee and Chaza McKenzie. The finish of this one was Armstrong hitting a 450 splash off the top rope onto Shaza for the 1-2-3. Up next, we had Lee Moriarty over Dominic Guarini. Obviously, I love this match. Y'all know how much I'm a fan of Dominic Guarini, and I'm a huge Lee Moriarty fan as well. You know, I was a big fan of his on his indie run pre-AEW, and it's always good to see him back on the indie scene because, you know, he's mainly making appearances. I mean, he makes some AEW appearances, of course, but most of his work in the company has been in Ring of Honor up to this point. So it's a kind of a treat seeing Moriarty on the indie scene doing his thing in singles action. Him and Guarini have some history. I believe this is the first time that Moriarty's defeated Guarini one-on-one, if I remember correctly. They've wrestled each other a few times. But that said, the finish of this one was Moriarty hitting, I think he calls it the flying fatal guillotine. But it's basically like a running leg lariat for the three count. After that, we had Hot Commodity. Oh, by the way, I'll give this a shout out. If I remember Dean Malenko hitting this leg lariat type move, you know, if you want like reference point, Dean Malenko had a really good version of this back in like his WCW days. The next match we had was a tag team match, Hot Commodity, the team of Hayden Buckland and Trevor Outlaw. They defeat the Garbage Daddies, the team of Alec Price and Cole Radrick. Finish here is, I'll do my best to explain. Basically, the referee gets distracted, and then Hayden Backlund comes up behind Cole Radrick, hits him with a low blow. That leads to a belly-to-back and top rope elbow drop double team move from Hot Commodity to Radrick, and then they pin him, get the pinfall victory, Hot Commodity over the Garbage Daddies, and a big win right there. We had Dex Royal over Dan the Dad, Puff, and Shane Sabre in a four-way match after that. The finish here, a bit difficult to explain, but like throughout the match, a lot of referees enter, and there's a referee that's actually down, face down in the middle, and like kind of towards the side of the ring. So there's like five or six refs in the ring, everyone trying to figure out who the actual ref is, the legal ref for this match. And as this is happening, Dex Royal like kind of flies through the sea of referees, is kind of like splits the sea of referees, comes through, hits a super kick onto Puff, and then goes up top. It's a top rope frog splash. 1-2-3. It gets the pin on Puff, and Dex Royal wins the four-way. After that, we had the BLP heavyweight title on the line. Kevin Q defends and retains over Miyu Yamashita. The finish here was Yamashita was going for a spinning backhand or something like that. It was like a strike, and Kevin Q fell over to avoid the strike. Looked like he just couldn't stand, but it turns out he was actually playing possum, and Yamashita goes to pick him up off the ground. Q does a small package as like a possum pin, but instead of actually going for the pin, he uses the small package just to float right into a God's Last Gift, or I always call it the God's Last Gift because that's what Tyler Black, a.k.a. Seth Rollins, called it in Ring of Honor. But it's like a fisherman buster. But God's Last Gift, so I'll probably always call it that, unless Q gives it like a name after like himself. But anyway, Kevin Q wins the match. He grabs a microphone afterwards after he retains his title. And in some big news, he calls out Jinder Mahal. So it's going to be Jinder, and I do not know the name that Jinder's going to be using outside of WWE. I completely forgot what name he's going to use, but for all intents and purposes, Jinder Mahal is going to be wrestling Kevin Q at Black Label Pro for the BLP Heavyweight Championship. I saw Mahal on Twitter tweeted something along the lines of, like, who the F is Kevin Q? And I made sure to respond underneath that because Kevin Q is actually the most recent winner of the Punjabi prison match, which is pretty full circle when you think about this all going down. Kevin Q and Dominic Guarini won a Punjabi prison match during GCW spring break just, you know, a couple months ago. And so Q won Punjabi prison very recently. So Mahal should very well know about this, but that'd be wild. You know, BLP, Mikey Blanton, I never put anything past them. Maybe they'll get the Punjabi prison and make it themselves, and maybe we'll get Q versus Mahal in a Punjabi prison in BLP. Who knows? But I'm very much looking forward to seeing Kevin Q and Jinder Mahal in Black Label Pro. I know that's a big get for Mikey Blanton as well. He was tweeting a lot about that, about wanting to get Jinder once he found out he's going to be available. After that, we had Joe Janela over Mean Jay Lee. The finish of this one was a top rope flying elbow drop from Janela for the 1-2-3. After that, we had the Progress tag team titles on the line. Sanity, the team of Big Damo and Axel Tischer, defend and retain their championships over the highlight reel, the team of Damon and Damian Reel. The finish of this one was a double team neckbreaker and Vader bomb combo by Tischer and Damo for the 3 count. After that, we had the BLP Midwest title on the line. Matt Mikowski defends and retains over Filthy Tom Lawler. If y'all have been listening to any of my shows, y'all know that Matt Mikowski is one of my favorite wrestlers in the world. Him and Tom Lawler obviously complement each other very well because both are actual, legitimate, former professional MMA fighters. For people who may not know, Matt Mikowski has fought professionally in Bellator and I believe Elite XC before it kind of merged and kind of became Strikeforce. You have to do the research on the history of that company, but basically, Mikowski has an actual legitimate MMA background and record. Filthy Tom Lawler was a legitimate top 10 light heavyweight in the UFC, and like, I mean, that speaks for itself. Tom Lawler was a great fighter, and he still is a great fighter. He still competes occasionally. I want to say he's announced his MMA retirement, but you never know in MMA. It's similar to pro wrestling. Like, no one ever really ever retires because there's always, and if not MMA, there's like bare knuckle and like all these alternative, you get into like the celebrity and YouTuber boxing world and all this stuff. So who knows? But Tom Lawler, Matt Mikowski, I'd be down to see these guys wrestle each other 1,000 times in professional wrestling. I'd be down to watch these guys fight each other in mixed martial arts. And I love the stylistic matchup here, obviously, because of all those reasons. And the finish I thought was done really smartly because of the people involved in their backgrounds. So basically what winds up happening is both guys are exchanging strikes back and forth. And at the very end, both Lawler and Mikowski are going for kicks at the same time. But Mikowski hits like a jumping head kick before Lawler can land. But both guys hit the ground. So Mikowski lands the kick, but he's spent and exhausted and hurt because of all the strikes Lawler had just landed on him prior to this. So both guys are down on the mat. The referee is counting to 10. As both guys get to 9, Mikowski gets to his feet and Lawler falls over. Like, he almost gets up but falls over. And Mikowski wins by knockout. You know, referee 10 count. Which, once again, considering the history and everything I just mentioned about these guys, that's the perfect type of finish for the two of them. Because it's one of those things where, like, you know, at the end of the day, I think it'd be badass to see Matt Mikowski tap out Tom Lawler in an armbar. I think it'd be badass to see Tom Lawler, you know, lock in, a twister or something on Matt Mikowski and, like, watch each other, you know, tap one another out and stuff like that. But I thought this was a smart finish because it was like a knockout. Like you were watching MMA and you never really see, like, you rarely ever see in today's modern day of wrestling matches finish by people not being able to stand up and, you know, answer the 10 count. Outside of like last man standing matches, you like never see it. So I liked everything about this. After that, we had Billy Starks over Kylie Rae. Billy Starks gets the win after Kylie Rae reverses a Segway driver attempt into a victory roll, and then Billy Starks reverses the victory roll into an O'Connor roll and pins Kylie Rae for the 1-2-3. After the match, Billy, gives a bunch of respect to Kylie Rae and, you know, holds up her ROH Women's TV Championship. And the main event of the show, we had the Black Label Pro tag team titles on the line. Latinos Most Wanted, the team of Cota Hernandez and Zabin Gage. They defeat Bang and Matthews, the team of August Matthews and Davey Bang, the former Bang Bros, to become the new champions. The finish here was Zabin Gage hitting a clout cutter onto the apron, onto Matthews, to pretty much take him out of the match. And then the Latinos Most Wanted did a double team Death Valley driver and top rope double stomp onto Davey Bang and then pin him. 1-2-3. Latinos Most Wanted are the new BLP tag team champions. After the match, Bang and Matthews show respect to the new champions by putting the belts around their waists, and they all, you know, dap it up and kind of hug, and that's the end of the show. So big title change there at the end of the BLP show, because as far as the tag team titles went, Bang and Matthews had held those things for like almost 600 days. So a long title reign ended there at the end of VLP Family Reunion. Moving on, got results for New Japan Pro Wrestling. This is Dominion results. Took place on, well, technically like this morning, depending on, you know, where you are in the world. I'm going to give you some quick results for the actual, you know, winners and losers of these matches, and then elaborate a little more on some stuff that's going to have effect on Forbidden Door for AEW and New Japan. So the results we've got here, and these are available, by the way, if you want to watch this show on New Japan World. We had Tetsuya Naito over Callum Newman, a six-man tag match where TMDK, the Mighty Don't Kneel, the team of Fujita, Robbie Eagles, and Zack Sabre Jr., they defeat the Bullet Club War Dogs team of Clark Connors, Drilla Money, along with LJ Cleary. We had the NJPW King of Pro Wrestling title on the line in a Storm Catch Rules match. The Great Okan defeats Yuya Nomura to become the new champion. We had the Never Openweight six-man titles on the line. LIJ, the team of Bushi, Hiromu Takahashi, and Yoda, they defeat the team of Hiroshi Tanahashi, Oleg Bolton, and Toru Yano. And that was a title change there. We had the NJPW World Television title on the line. Jeff Cobb defends and retains over Tomohiro Ishii. One of my favorite things about this was seeing Ishii hit a Frankensteiner during this match, followed up by a running lariat, which I thought was going to be the end of the match, but Jeff Cobb ultimately retains. After that, we had the IWGP Tag Team titles and the NJPW Strong Openweight Tag Team title on the line in a four-way elimination tornado match. The order of eliminations was... Well, let me give you the participants first. We had TMDK, the team of Mikey Nichols and Shane Haste. We had Bullet Club, combination of Kenta and Chase Owens, who were the IWGP champions going into this. We had the Guerrillas of Destiny, team of Hikaleo and El Fantasmo, who were the strong openweight champions going into this. And we had Hirooki Goto and Yoshihashi in this as well. The order of eliminations is as follows. We had TMDK eliminating Guerrillas of Destiny in about 6.5 minutes. We had Bishamon, the team of Goto and Yoshihashi, they defeat the Bullet Club in about 11 minutes into the match. And then it comes down to TMDK defeating Bishamon to become the, you know, altogether unified IWGP Tag Team / NJPW Strong Openweight. They did not have any of the titles going into it, but they leave with all the championships. After that, we had the Never Openweight title on the line. Shingo Takagi and Hanare fight to a double knockout draw about 15 minutes or so into the match. Shingo retains his title due to the draw. We had the IWGP World Heavyweight title on the line in a lumberjack match. Jon Moxley defends and retains over Evil in 25 minutes. The big news coming out of this is they set up Jon Moxley versus Tetsuya Naito for Forbidden Door. That will be for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. And, you know, I could see Naito winning that match. Like, personally speaking, I'm a bigger Moxley fan. I'm pretty much always going to root for Moxley. There's very few people I'm gonna want Moxley to lose to be completely honest. I'm a big fan of his, and I really respect what he means across like the whole landscape of professional wrestling. The fact that this man could like easily just take millions and millions of dollars and go to the WWE and just coast. The fact that he's already making millions and millions of dollars at AEW, but you know he still wants to be involved in New Japan, even to the point where he is the New Japan champion, the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. And then on top of that, he spends his free, quote-unquote, free time taking independent bookings and doing stuff like Bloodsport, and at one point was like the long-term GCW World Champion and feuding with Nick Gage and defending that title when he could and stuff. I mean, Jon Moxley's an animal. Even in his spare time, he's, you know, even though he's not the best at jiu-jitsu, right, he's still very new to that, fairly low level in the grand scheme of things, but like I respect the fact that he's out there trying to do like jiu-jitsu tournaments in his spare time, you know, stuff like that. Like, so I really respect Jon Moxley, and I'm very happy that he defeated Evil to retain his title as well. Like, I think that would have been a gigantic mistake to put that title back on Evil, especially after the first Evil run was so polarizing. I wouldn't even say polarizing. It felt like just nobody was down for what they were seeing, and he just didn't feel like the right guy at all to be that champion in that company. But I could see Naito becoming the champion again, but my early prediction is Moxley. I think it's going to be a badass match, though. I'm looking forward to that. I'm glad that they've set that up for Forbidden Door. And the main event of the show, we had the Best of Super Junior Finals. This was El Desperado defeating Taiji Ishimori. El Desperado is the Best of Super Junior 31. So that, once again, is NJPW Dominion. You can watch that show if you'd like over on New Japan World. All right, moving on. We have results for HOG. This is House of Glory. Mike Santana presents Puerto Rican Weekend. This is available on Triller TV Plus as a part of their monthly package. This took place yesterday at the time of this recording, so this is from June the 8th, and it was from New York City in the NYC Arena. These are the results. We had Pedro Donas over Matt Awesome, Chris Cage, Jarrett Diaz, Corey Mack, and Eden. The finish of this one was a spear from Donas to Cage for the 1-2-3. After that, we had Mercedes Martinez over Diamond Virago and Tasha Steeles. The finish here was a really sweet, brutal-looking finish. I've seen Mercedes do this submission before, but it always looks awesome. Mercedes does the Romero special into a dragon sleeper to tap out Virago. I can't do any better than explaining it that way, but I mean, just imagine that. A Romero special and then just bending somebody back into a position of a dragon sleeper and choking them out like that, forcing them to tap. Mercedes Martinez has always been one of my favorite submission specialists in the game. I love that finisher. After that, we had Charles Mason over Dan Moff. The finish here, the best way I can explain, Dan Moff hits a burning hammer onto Charles Mason and pins him. Was definitely going to get the three count, but Raheem Royal's on the outside and grabs the ref, so the ref can't make the count. While this is happening and the ref is distracted, Mason hits a low blow and then grabs a Puerto Rican flag, chokes Dan Moff from behind, like strangles him with the Puerto Rican flag, and then locks in a rear naked choke on top of the flag, so it's like a double choke pretty much. The referee doesn't know that there's a flag underneath the RNC, and this causes Moff to pass out. The referee has to stop it, so winner by technical submission, ref stoppage, Charles Mason over Dan Moff. We have the HOG tag team titles on the line. The team of the main event, Jay Lyon and Midas Black, they defeat Epico and Primo, who y'all might remember back in the day from the WWE. The finish of this one was the grand finale, which is their 3D X Factor type move for the 1-2-3. After that, things get really weird because the best way I can even explain this wasn't a match, but there was a segment where a fake Hollywood Hogan, a fake Kane, and fake Dudley Boys all fight each other. We see a 3D through a table. Kane eventually wins this whole thing. But go back and check this out if you want to have any idea what I'm talking about. This was almost like I believe intermission might have even been after this. But it felt like this was like part of intermission that we all got to watch. But yeah, fake Hollywood Hogan, fake Kane, and fake Dudleys have a fight, a non-match, kind of in the middle of all this. We had the HOG Crown Jewel title on the line. Carlos Ramirez defends and retains over Homicide. And to finish this one, I wrote down as a pump handle Awful Waffle. If you're familiar with Awful Waffle, it's Chuck Taylor's finishing move. It's like a backdrop, kind of like, or a belly-to-back setup, but into a pile driver. Awful Waffle is one of my favorite moves in the history of pro wrestling. But this was like a pump handle version of that. It looked really nice for the 1-2-3. And the main event of the show, we had the HOG heavyweight title on the line in a no disqualification match. Mike Santana defends and retains over Amazing Red. I love this match. The atmosphere and the energy for this match was off the charts. The fans were super into this. Both guys obviously massively over. Mike Santana, their current champion, and Amazing Red means just so much. Like, this company would not be existing if it wasn't for Amazing Red, let's put it that way. And I think these two guys went out there and just absolutely killed it for, 25 minutes. The best way I can kind of describe the finish here, because it was action-packed and the fans were going nuts, we had a code red by Amazing Red, which is usually enough to finish pretty much anyone. Amazing Red innovated and created that code red move. I remember seeing that move for the first time on like LimeWire back in the day. For people who are old enough to remember those, I always call them the Napster offshoots. Like when Napster got shut down, there was like LimeWire and Kazaa and BearShare and like all these different file sharing platforms or softwares you could download, allegedly. And I remember seeing Amazing Red on like LimeWire and or maybe like Kazaa. And so this is also pre-YouTube. So I remember seeing him doing the code red and just being mind blown back in like, 2001 or 2002 or whenever it was I was discovering this stuff. But Amazing Red hits a code red onto Mike Santana. Santana kicks out at two. Amazing Red goes up top after that, hits a top rope double stomp, and then a top rope frog splash. Santana still kicks out again at two. Red goes back up to the top. Santana catches him on his shoulders and basically like throws him off his shoulders. Red lands on his feet, but Santana follows up immediately with a step up kick and then hits his tornado lariat, his finisher, for a kick out at two from Red. And once Red gets back to his feet, Santana hits another tornado lariat. 1, 2, 3. Mike Santana retains his title over Amazing Red. Once again, I can't put this over enough. This was an awesome match. This was a great show. The crowd was wild. The crowd was into this the entire show from start to finish. First match, opener, all the way to the main event. But that main event especially, like, that crowd was super into it. So, kudos and, applause to HOG. They put on great events and consistently have the entire time the promotion's been around. So if you want to check that show out, I highly recommend it over on Triller TV Plus. Moving on, you got results for Glory Pro Ascend Episode 38. This show is available completely for free over on the Glory Pro YouTube channel, and this premiered on June 2nd. These are the results. Show started off with Jake Bosch over Big Munch, Chris Hendricks, and Cordell Kane. The finish here was a kind of like a grounded axe kick with a twist, but essentially an axe kick onto Kane for the 1, 2, 3. After that, we had Stallion Rogers, the former Kurt Stallion, over ATM. The finish here was Kurt grabbing the referee and then raking the eyes of ATM while the referee was distracted, and following up with, I believe the commentator called it a Gotch butterfly pile driver. That's probably the best way you could describe it. It was like a Gotch style, because he had his arms through the one arm through the legs, but then he also had one kind of underhook like you would for like a package pile driver. So nice little touch on making the move a bit different, and it looked totally brutal. So Stallion Rogers with the win over ATM. It's good to see Kurt Stallion. I'll probably always call him Kurt Stallion. Stallion Rogers. Popping up more in the States and on some of these shows. He was a very big deal on the indie scene years back, especially in the Southeast, and also companies like Glory Pro. He's very successful in as well. But I got to see him live, whether it was in Glory Pro, Glory Pro, or saw him a lot in the Southeast, like at Southern Underground Pro Subgraps, at SCI, the Scenic City Invitational, and those kind of shows. You see him all the time. He was actually the first ever Sup Bone Storm champion, and people might not even remember, but he had a short stint in the WWE a few years back as well, where he surprisingly kept his name. Like, he was Kurt Stallion on the indie scene, and he got signed around the same time as guys like Blake Christian, who was renamed Trey Baxter, guys like Alex Zane, who were renamed Ari Sterling. And I remember this so well, obviously, because, we were covering those results for 205 Live when they were on that show here on the weekend or years ago. But it was surprising because at that time, Kurt Stallion kept his name. He was called Kurt Stallion on WWE television. His run there wasn't very long, lasted probably less than a year. There was a lot of budget cuts and stuff during the pandemic, and he was a part of that. And then he hit the indies and looked like he was going to have a big indie run. And then he said some stupid stuff online, and I'll let you guys do your research on all of that. It's been a long time since then. He's apologized since then. There hasn't been, like, the repeated actions. I'm also full transparency, I'm not of the group that is affected by comments that he would have made. So it's one of those things where, like, I don't want to speak for a community that I shouldn't be speaking for. So if you don't like Styling Rogers, that's fair enough. I'm just of the mindset of, like, depending on the circumstances, I'm pretty big on giving people second chances, especially if years have passed and there hasn't been repeated actions and there has been apologies. You know what I mean? So it's one of those things where at least Glory Pro feels good enough about Styling Rogers, and the fans gave him a good reaction and reception and stuff. So I'm interested to see what it looks like for him going forward, because he's been spending most of his time in recent years in Japan, basically to get away from the negative backlash, at least how it felt like. But he also, you know, was doing really good work over in Japan as well. So that said, Styling Rogers over ATM. And the main event of the show, we had an Oklahoma Tornado tag match where Cody Lane and Dan the Dad defeated Raheem De La Suede and Mason St. Goods. The finish of this one was Cody Lane hitting a second rope pile driver through four open chairs onto Raheem to get the pinfall victory for himself and Dan the Dad in that main event. And they've been going back and forth and feuding with these guys for a while. So big W for Cody Lane and the tag team of Dan the Dad and Cody Lane. After the match, they basically just kind of hug and celebrate as the show ends. Once again, that's a Glory Pro Wrestling Ascend episode 38. Available completely for free over on YouTube. All right, moving on. Got predictions for TNA Against All Odds 2024. I believe the plan is for me to do the post-show review with Joel and or Joel and Cresta. It's usually a combination of the three of us or two of the three of us for those post-shows for the major TNA pay-per-views. So I'm looking forward to Against All Odds. There should be, and we'll talk about this a little bit more with the NXT predictions, but I'd imagine there's going to be some WWE / NXT crossover on Against All Odds. So it should be a pretty big show with a lot of eyes on it for TNA. I'm very much looking forward to watching the show and covering it. Once again, the post show will be on YouTube.com/Fightful. I almost got that mixed up with the website. The website, of course, Fightful.com. There's links all over the place there for all this stuff, too. But Fightful main channel over on YouTube. Against All Odds, right after the show, catch the review. As far as predictions goes, you know, the show's going to be taking place June 14th, which is this upcoming Friday. So I won't have another episode the weekend or before this. So let's get the predictions out there right now for y'all. I'm going to start off with Steve Maclin and Mike Santana versus the Rascals, Zachary Rentz and Trey Miguel. I'm going to go Rascals in that one. That's a tough one, but I'm going to go Rascals. And I hope that they get a bigger push towards the tag titles. We've got the System, the team of Brian Myers and Eddie Edwards, defending the TNA World Tag Team titles against the Nemeth Brothers. I always mess up that name. The Nemeth Brothers, the team of Nick and Ryan Nemeth. Of course, the former Dolph Ziggler being Nick. So this is a hard one to call because, like, I don't know what the long-term plans for the Nemeths would be. Maybe Ryan turns and joins the System. Maybe. I don't know. I'd keep the titles on all the members of the System, so that's going to be a bit of a spoiler for one of these other results I might as well talk about next, but I'd have Brian Myers and Eddie Edwards retain. Maybe Ryan Nemeth, you know, turns on his brother or something. I don't know. It's interesting to see the position Nick's already kind of in with TNA because, you know, I don't know. It's not that I feel like he should be doing more or be even more spotlighted, because I feel like it's also probably a lot of his call to, like, have himself doing stuff with Ryan, because I'm sure they've wanted to work together for years, but we're always in different companies and just couldn't do it. So maybe they do win the tag team titles here. I mean, I can see it happening, but I'm going to go with the System retaining. That might as well lead to the next one. A good segue to Moose defending the TNA world title against Broken Matt Hardy. I would definitely have Moose retain here. Nothing against Broken Matt. It's just Moose won the title not too long ago. I think given the long title runs prior to Moose and this whole rebrand with TNA, I'd have Moose hold the title a bit longer. I wouldn't have him be the champion for, like, a super long amount of time, if I'm being totally honest. There are other people that I think would be interesting to see with that championship, and maybe have never held it. But that said, I totally expect Moose to retain the title here. And as I mentioned, I could very well see this being one of the matches, either during the match or after the match, where we see somebody from NXT. We have Mustafa Ali defending the TNA X Division Championship against Trent Seven. I'm going to go with Mustafa Ali to retain there, but I think it's going to be a banger of a match. I like both guys a lot, and Ali is doing some of the best work of his whole career. It's like he finally got to get out of the WWE system and be his own person and like try his own stuff, and I think it's working pretty well, especially in TNA. And then we've got Jordynne Grace defending her TNA Knockouts Championship against a mystery opponent. This is where I could pretty much guarantee we'll be seeing someone from NXT. I think that, well, we'll get to my NXT Battleground predictions here soon, but I'll just go ahead and say it. I think Jordynne Grace should win the NXT Women's Championship, but I'm also a gigantic mark for Jordynne Grace, so you know what I mean? People probably figured I'd say that regardless of who Jordynne Grace is wrestling, but I think Jordynne Grace should go into this match at Against All Odds with both championships, and then maybe Roxanne Perez, they run that back at Against All Odds. I could see that maybe happening, but there's a lot of options they can go with. I would love to see not even just someone from NXT. I'd love to see someone like a woman from the main roster of the WWE come over and wrestle Jordynne Grace. I think that'd be incredible to see something like that happen. But there's a ton of options. There's also, of course, indie options and other promotions and stuff that they can go to. But I'd imagine given the build-up and what we've seen between TNA and NXT recently with Jordynne Grace being over there, the whole NXT TNA idea, and I think both companies working together is very, very smart and beneficial to both companies. Like, I really like the idea of this partnership. But I'm going to say Jordynne Grace retains the TNA Knockouts Championship unless it winds up being some sort of like double title match or something. And this is going to get really convoluted because there's a lot of ways you can go with this, but hypothetically speaking, if Jordynne Grace was the TNA Knockouts Champion and the NXT Women's Champion going into this, and both of the titles were on the line, or one of the two titles were on the line, then I could see Jordynne Grace losing. But if it's just going to be Jordynne Grace as the TNA Knockouts Champion going into this match, I think she's going to retain. So once again, check out the post show. That's going to be on the Fightful main YouTube channel right after Against All Odds. That'll be this Friday night, the 14th. And I expect a really fun show. I always look forward to the major four pay-per-views every year from TNA. And this one, you know, all of them usually have a lot of eyes on them because they only have the four big pay-per-views a year. But I think the wrestling world's going to especially be watching because of the, you know, the possibilities that are out there for crossovers from the WWE/NXT being involved in the show also. Moving on, got some quick results for NWA Power. This show is from June 4th, and it's available on CW. I've been watching it through the CW app, and these are the results. Show started off with a NWA Crockett Cup first-round match with a Country Gentlemen team of AJ Kazana and KC Kazana, along with Joe Kazana on the outside, defeat the Savages of Samoa to advance in the tournament. Let's see, there were some segments and stuff not really worth getting into. We found out Black G's is going to be managing Mims, so that's pretty good pairing. Tim Storm is now Baron Von Storm, so that's some NWA booking for you. There was also an interview segment at one point where EC3 basically shows a bunch of respect to Dory Funk Jr. So that's just some kind of non-wrestling stuff that happened throughout the show as well. Drew Garabo, who's a radio host that I've never heard of, is going to be represented by Wrecking Ball Ligurski. Wrecking Ball is going to be facing EC3, so that's all like the non-match stuff. I figured I'd just kind of get that out of the way as well. We had another NWA Crockett Cup first round match where the Immortals, the team of Kratos and Odinson, they defeat the Kids, the team of Alexander Lev and Jackson Drake, to advance to the next round of the Crockett Cup. And the main event of the show, we had the NWA World Women's title, number one contendership on the line Ella Envy defeats Kylie Page and Taylor Rising. So Ella Envy is next up for NWA World Women's Champion Kenzie Page. So that's NWA Power for this week. Once again, kind of difficult to get super pumped on this show right now, mainly because this has all been pre-taped to where, like, I already know where the Crockett Cup's going and the results going forward and stuff. But that said, if you have not watched this, keep following along. I'll continue to give you results to keep you updated where they are. Not in real time, because in real time would have been when they taped it, but you know what I mean. Like, as these are airing, I'll kind of keep you updated on the Crockett Cup. And I am looking forward to Ella Envy versus Kenzie Page when it happens. I've said it before and I'll say it again. I think that Kenzie Page is the most valuable commodity that NWA currently has in their possession. Like, I think that they need to get the most they possibly can out of Kylie Rae as one of their top stars, especially losing Camille. Kenzie, she's their woman, you know what I mean? She really, in my opinion, I view her as like the top draw of the company. She's the person that I the most look forward to watching wrestle. I think she has some of the best matches, some of the best promos, the best character work. I love that she defeated Camille for that championship, and it put even more prestige on Kenzie. And I like Kenzie's work outside of NWA as well. I've always liked her indie work. Great job, especially at like New South. So, you know, I think the world of Kenzie Page, and I think that she would be a massive star in AEW or WWE as well. But while she is in the NWA, I think that Billy Corgan and that team needs to just keep pushing the hell out of her. Just make her main event after main event that she's involved in, have banger matches, and I would definitely have her retain over Ella Envy. Nothing against Ella, but once again, this is all because I think they should be spotlighting Kenzie Page as much as possible in the NWA. Moving on, have results for NXT Level Up. This is from the show that aired on June 7th. I watched these on Hulu, so that's where I recommend you check the show out as well. Three matches this week, and these are the results. We had Tank Ledger over Tavian Heights. This was another one-on-one match for Tank Ledger because Hank Walker is still out with injury, and he's not able to tag into Hank, but they do want to tag. I love the team of Hank and Tank. I talked about that before on this show. I'm a big fan of those two guys. I think they both have really bright futures in the WWE system. The finish of this one was Tank hitting a bubble bomb onto Tavian for the three count. After that, we had Adriana Rizzo over Ren Sinclair. Rizzo, a part of the D'Angelo family, and this is her first appearance since February. So good to see her back. The finish here was, it was like a split-legged splash for the 1-2-3. This was also the first win in the career of Adriana Rizzo. So good to see her back. Good to see her get her first win, and good to see her as, you know, a part of the D'Angelo family once again. And she celebrates with the family along with Stax after the match as well. And the main event of the show, we had Chase U, Duke Hudson, and Riley Osborne. They defeat Javier Bernal, Big Body Javi, and Drake Moreau. The finish of this one was Osborne going over the top with a dive to the outside, taking out Bernal. And inside the ring, Duke Hudson hits a reverse DDT onto Drake Moreau to get the 1-2-3. So winning ways for Chase U, and a solid episode of NXT Level Up. I'm not going to elaborate too much more on that because I am going to go right into predictions for NXT Battleground. Those two things kind of go hand in hand, Level Up and Battleground. Battleground is going to be taking place later today on June the 9th. It'll be available over on Peacock, and I plan to watch it live. I'm looking forward to the show, especially because, like I mentioned before with the TNA predictions, we already know Jordan Grace is going to be on the show, and you know, not that Ethan Page is like a TNA defector, because obviously he had a multiple years long run in AEW in between, but like Ethan Page, I still always kind of think of as like a TNA guy, like at heart in a lot of ways, because he was so successful there as a part of the North. But obviously he signed to WWE at this point. And it was great to see him as a part of the company, just in general. Ethan Page, I think, is fitting in really well in NXT up to this point. But once again, the point of all me saying all of that is because I think, similar to what I'm expecting to see at TNA Against All Odds, I think that we're going to see more TNA involvement that shows up in NXT Battleground. As far as the predictions, we've got the ladder match for the inaugural North American Women's Championship. This is going to be Sol Ruka, Lash Legend, Fallon Henley, Jada Parker, Meesham, and Kalani Jordan. My prediction is going to be Sol. I'm going to go with Sol to get the win in this one. I was alive in New Orleans for the inaugural Men's North American Championship ladder match. It was also, I believe, a six-way match. None of those people, I think, are even in X, or even in WWE anymore. If you count Ricochet, who it sounds like he's going to be leaving soon. That match was one of my favorite matches I've ever seen live. I believe it got 5 stars from Dave Meltzer as well, for whatever that's worth. But I was live in the crowd for that NXT show. The main event of that one was Gargano versus Ciampa. And I also wound up winning Wrestle Rumble. That's the only time I've ever gotten first place in a Wrestle Rumble contest. I won a NXT Championship replica belt for getting first place in that TakeOver Pick'em contest, actually. So it was just a great night all the way across. But I'll always remember that ladder match. It was such a badass ladder match. So the women got a lot to live up to when it comes to an inaugural North American Championship ladder match. But there's a lot of talent in this one, too. So I'm very interested to see how this one goes down. I'll take Saul on that one once again. We got the triple threat match for the NXT North American Championship. Oba Femi defending against Wesley and Joe Coffey. I'm going to say Oba Femi retains here. After that, we got an NXT Underground match. Lola Vice versus Shayna Baszler. This is a tough one to call. I think I'm going to really like this. You know, I usually don't like the NXT Underground stuff because it's so corny, or even like Raw Underground, all that stuff is just very corny to me. But Shayna Baszler, actual MMA background, former UFC fighter. Lola Vice, I think, won all but one of her Bellator fights. She's probably like 5-1 or 6-1 or something at Bellator. So she was very legitimate too. Her real name is Valerie Lareda. But I think Lola Vice is going to get the win here. Stylistically, this should be a lot of fun. In a lot of ways, it's kind of like what I was talking about with Matt Bukowski versus Filthy Tom from BLP. But I think Lola Vice is going to win, mainly because I feel like Lola is going to be pushed to become the NXT Women's Champion soon. So it would make sense for her to win over Baszler. Baszler doesn't really need to win in NXT. She's a regular part of the main roster, and it just wouldn't make sense, in my opinion, to have Baszler kill the momentum of Vice right now. So I'll take Lola Vice in the NXT Underground match. I've talked about it before, but I'll just say once again, we got Roxanne Perez defending the NXT Women's Championship against Jordynne Grace. Personally speaking, you know, I'm going to go with my heart on this one. I'm going to say Jordynne Grace actually wins that match. I'm going to say Jordynne Grace wins and becomes the NXT and TNA champion. This frees it up because, once again, Roxy can either come over and win it back at Against All Odds, or it frees up Roxanne to go to Raw or SmackDown and just be a part of the main roster going forward. And then you can have another woman like Lola Vice being the obvious choice, and at least in my opinion, I would have Lola Vice maybe eventually beat Jordynne Grace for the NXT Women's Championship. Maybe Lola Vice even pops up at Against All Odds. I mean, who knows? There's so many options they can go with. That's why this is so exciting. But I've said it 1,000 times. I think Jordynne Grace at this point should have been the TNA world champion. I'm not talking about just like the knockout champion. I'm talking about the main world title that Moose currently holds. If it was me, if you asked me right now, I would prefer if Jordynne Grace was the TNA world champion over Moose. Like, I think she'd be a good option for champion right now. But I also think that whenever it's a possibility contractually that Jordynne Grace is going to sign full-time with WWE whenever it's possible, that's just complete speculation. I don't know anything. I'm not reporting anything. It just seems pretty obvious that WWE is pretty high on her, and she has accomplished everything she could in TNA outside of winning the world title. She's done everything else multiple times, but it's awesome seeing this crossover once again. I'm going to take Jordynne Grace to win. We've got Nathan Frazier and Axiom defending the NXT tag team titles against the OC, team of Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson. You know what? I'm going to say the OC actually wins this one. I know that sounds weird. I just feel like they have nothing going for themselves on any brand outside of, they're kind of like loosely connected again with AJ Styles on SmackDown, But if they were carrying around the NXT tag titles with them, at least it'd make them look better than they do now. I just feel like the OC, that tag team of Gallows and Anderson, is just such an afterthought in like every way, shape, and form of the WWE system right now. Now, that said, to full transparency, I don't watch every segment of SmackDown weekly. I don't watch every episode of NXT's, you know, weekly show either. So it's very possible that the OC is getting more shine than what I'm actually aware of. But I still keep pretty good eyes on most stuff and keep up to date enough to know that the OC feels very, very lost in the mix in recent years in the WWE. And if anything's going to boost him a little bit, I think it'd be winning this tag team titles. Now, that said, I'm a massive fan of Nathan Frazier. I was a big fan of his on the indie scene, his quick indie run when he was Ben Carter. You know, we talked about him a lot here on the Weekender while we could. And people forget, you know, he had some AEW matches and I believe offered an AEW contract and chose WWE and went to NXT UK. And, you know, he trained with Black and Brave with Seth Rollins, you know, as his trainer and stuff. And so it made sense for him to go to the WWE system. Like, he had some people looking out for him in high places and stuff like that. But I think it's worked out pretty well for him. And I like Axiom as well. Way better than A-Kid. Obviously, same wrestler. You know, always a talented guy. But you knew someone with the name A-Kid, they just weren't going to stick with that in the WWE. They were going to change that. I knew that from the first second. On NXT UK, they didn't really care because that was like the redheaded stepchild of the WWE system that people just weren't paying attention to. But I knew that they weren't going to have a kid. That's a weird name to market. It just is. But that said, I think the OC is going to win that one. And the main event of the show, we have Trick Williams defending the NXT Championship against Ethan Page. It's really cool to see Ethan come in and be a big deal. I feel like he was massively underused in his AEW run. Mentioned before, I loved his work in TNA, especially with the North. And then when they split, I liked the single stuff with Ethan. And of course, that led to Josh Alexander having an incredible singles run that he's still on to this day. But I don't know. My gut feels like they're going to bring Ethan in and have him win and be like the heel champion for a while going forward. But Trick Williams just beat Ilya Dragunov for this thing. And Trick's super over, and he's another guy. If you go back and listen to episodes of the Weekender from like a year plus ago, back when Trick Williams, I mean, this was probably even longer ago than that, for a while Trick Williams was basically just like the sidekick of Carmelo Hayes, and Trick was having some matches on NXT Level Up, just getting reps in. And I had known Carmelo Hayes as Christian Casanova from the indies, so like he already had some indie buzz. Trick just didn't have the same level of buzz, but he was associated with Carmelo, but everyone was talking about Carmelo, Carmelo, Carmelo. Marsha, 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 right? For all of you Brady Bunch fans from back in the day that are old enough to even know that reference. But I was saying back then, I was like, Carmelo Hayes is going to be a big star in the WWE. He's got the potential to do that. He's got a ton of charisma, very good in the ring. Like, he'll do fine. But I think Trick Williams might be the real breakout of that duo. I was saying that years ago. Because he's got the size, the look, the charisma, like, and he was just getting better and better. And like every time I saw him on Level Up, I was like, dude, this guy's getting good. Like, and no one's really noticing because everyone is talking about Carmelo Hayes. I think Trick Williams has done a phenomenal job for himself. He's massively over with the NXT audience, and I think he's going to retain here. What do you do with Ethan after that? That's for Shawn Michaels to figure out. But I think that I think Trick Williams retains here, so I'll go with Trick. Once again, that's NXT Battleground. I'm looking forward to watching it later today on Peacock. And also, I almost forgot to mention, big news from Brooks Jensen, the guy out there representing my last name. I know he's really Bull Buchanan's son, but there's someone out there in the wrestling world. I've never seen someone in WWE with the last name Jensen. That's my last name, spelled the same way. So I'm very invested in Brooks Jensen, and I want him to do well, representing, once again, my last name. Plus, I think he's very talented. I actually like the guy a lot. That said, Brooks Jensen popped up at Bullpen Pro Wrestling in Georgia last night as well. So pretty big news. Brooks Jensen, like, you know, he had that argument on NXT commentary and got kind of like kicked out of the show recently. So it's cool seeing him popping up at indie shows now and kind of like this feud he's got with general manager Shawn Michaels. And I like the look, like the change in gimmick and appearance for Brooks Jensen. He looks more kind of like someone who'd be on like Raven's flock nowadays than kind of more like clean cut how he was with Josh Briggs and Fallon Henley and like their group and stuff. So I like a lot of what I'm seeing from Brooks Jensen. I think he's got a very bright future. Comes from a wrestling family. Once again, his father was Bull Buchanan, who I always enjoyed. I thought he was honestly a bit underrated. But that said, Brooks Jensen popped up once again at Bullpen Pro Wrestling, and that was last night. So keep your eyes peeled. You might see more appearances from Brooks Jensen and NXT stars on the independent circuit. We've seen guys like Charlie Dempsey appear and compete at Bloodsport recently and stuff. So wild world we are living in right now, and I absolutely love it as a pro wrestling fan. Moving on. Spoiler alert. If you do not want Ring of Honor spoilers and or MLW spoilers, go ahead and cut the show off right now. Otherwise, look at the timestamps below right here on Fightful Select. Also, if you're leaving, go ahead and please hit the like button here on Fightful Select as well. I really appreciate that. Timestamps are below in the description underneath the audio you're listening to right here on FightfulSelect.com. I'm going to start off with Ring of Honor spoilers, and then I'll give you another heads up, and then go into MLW spoilers. So, spoiler alert. These are Ring of Honor TV taping spoilers from Saturday, June 8th. That's last night during AEW Collision. And these will be airing on upcoming episodes of Ring of Honor Honor Club. They are courtesy of cagematch.net. These are the spoilers. We got the Iron Savages, the team of Boulder and Bronson, along with Jack Jameson. They defeat Jay Martinson, Isaiah Harris, and Eric Esnight in a six-man tag match. We had Anthony Henry, Cole Carter, Griff Garrison over the team of the Infantry, Sean Dean and Carly Bravo, and Serpentico in six-man action. Jacoby Watts with Nick Camarado on the outside over Brandon Cutler. Marina Shafir over Maggie Minerva. Lance Archer over Dion Russman. Layla Hirsch over Diamante. Titan over Aaron Solo. And Lee Johnson over Alex Reynolds, who had Evil Uno on the outside. So, some good stuff to look forward to from Ring of Honor. I'm always down to see the homie Jack Jameson out there. Along with the Iron Savages. So, good stuff. I'm sure that was there's a lot of squash matches, it looks like, on this, but that's kind of par for the course. You're going to get a lot of quick matches on these Ring of Honor tapings and stuff like that. A lot of showcase matches for some of the bigger talent. I can imagine the Lance Archer match did not last very long. Always good to see guys like Anthony Henry out there doing their thing. Any combination of Anthony Henry and the Infantry in a match, I'm going to be down for. I wish Trish Adora was wrestling on this, but it's still going to be nice to see her as a part of the Infantry. But, good stuff. I'm a huge Layla Hirsch fan. I think her versus Diamante is probably a banger. And Lee Johnson and Alex Reynolds is probably going to be pretty good as well. So those are the Ring of Honor TV taping spoilers. Spoiler alert. There is spoilers coming right now for MLW. This is their anniversary show, and it'll be airing on June the 22nd. I believe it'll be free on the MLW YouTube channel. So, these are spoilers for MLW Anniversary Show. We got Bobby Fish over Adam Priest. Opera Cup 2024 match where Davey Boy Smith Jr. defeats Timothy Thatcher. Another Opera Cup match where Akira defeats Kwan. We had the MLW National Openweight Championship. Bad Dude Tito defends and retains over Jake Crist. The MLW middleweight champion Mystico defends and retains over Star Jr. We have Mio Yamashita over Jazzy Yang and Danny Jordan. A bull rope match where Mads Kruger defeats One Called Manders. That was like the main event. It says Contra Unit beats down Manders after the match and drags him out of the arena. So I feel like they're going full on with Cruel. Like, I mean, it feels like based on Battle Riot that Matt Riddle is going to be the next MLW world champion. I imagine he's going to beat Satoshi Kojima for the title soon. But after that, if MLW has Cruel locked down, like, for any length of time, like, for the foreseeable future, I would have Cruel defeat Matt Riddle probably eventually for that thing. Otherwise, they're massively pushing Cruel, and I like it because I'm a fan of his. But he also is kind of doing his own thing with Contra Unit. It's like almost like this whole side this whole side thing going on, but it's also like he's so OP, so overpowered, that like you feel like he might as well be going for the world title also, right? But I'm interested to see what goes on between Krul and Manders, and of course Manders being a part of the SGC. Some interesting possibilities there for MLW going forward. So that'll do it for this episode of the Fightful Select Weekender podcast. I've been Steven Jensen. Please make sure to follow me on X at @FightTalk_. Make sure to use code FIGHTTALK in independentwrestling.tv or IWTV.live. Please listen and watch the Spotlight. It's every Thursday morning, 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time with myself and Jeremy Lambert. Last episode was myself and SP3, so please check that out. If you've missed it, please check that out on the main channel over on Fightful. And hit the like button here on FightfulSelect.com and make sure to tune into the Impact against, or sorry, the TNA Against All Odds post show on Friday night on the Fightful main channel. Once again, I've been Steven Jensen. Until next weekend, enjoy some professional wrestling.